This show is for the sales leader who knows they have a pivotal role in driving outstanding sales results. Getting hired or promoted to manage a sales team is a big accomplishment, but you know you have to work hard to become a great sales leader. You are listening to the Divine Comedy of Sales podcast. Here's your host, coach, and advisor to elite sales leaders from around the world, Matt McDarby.
Hello and welcome to the Divine Comedy of Sales podcast. I'm Matt McDarby, veteran seller, leader, coach, and advisor to elite sales leaders all over the world. I'm so excited to have you listening. In our latest season of interview episodes, I'm going to be asking some of the same questions about lessons learned, some of the great challenges that the leaders I'm interviewing have overcome. Who did they learn from? But there's one important question that I'm adding to the mix, and it's essentially, what are the most important parts of your system? And this is my way of bringing systems thinking, which has been a recurring theme of the last several episodes, into our conversations with highly effective and successful sales leaders. Why am I doing that? I'm doing that to help you clarify in your own mind, what are the key elements in your system? What does your sales leader's operating system look like? I'm really excited to have you listening in on these conversations. So I hope you love this season of interviews. Our very next guest is coming up right now. So my next guest started his selling career as an account executive at Yahoo. After rising to a director of sales role there, he moved on to lead a sales team at Yodel. From there, Chris moved to AOL, where he eventually became a senior director of sales. And since then, he's served as a chief revenue officer at Signpost, a senior VP of sales at Starry. And now Chris is the senior vice president of revenue at SetPoint, a provider of the technology that serves as the infrastructure for asset-backed lending. Please welcome Chris DiPatria to the Divine Comedy of Sales. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here, Matt.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I didn't mention in your bio, you are also University of Delaware alumnus like myself. I can't help but notice how many really successful and effective leaders are coming out of UD. I love it.
That's right. In the tri-state area, there's a ton for sure.
That's right. So, all right, well, let's just dive right in because I want to grab as much wisdom as I can from you. I know our audience is going to love hearing some of the things you've learned from doing this job for as long as you have. So we'll just dive in. So one of the things I've observed in my practice over the years is that the best sales leaders have a kind of a system. What I mean by that is they have a way of making sense of all of the sort of interconnected parts of the sales organization. They know how to diagnose and tune which levers to move to make the whole system work together to deliver the desired result. Now, you've been a really successful sales leader for a long time. What are the most important parts of your system?
Yeah, you know, I think taking a step back, when I think about building a system and really coming into a sales org, what you want to do as the head of sales is you're really only as good, I feel, as your sales operations leader, right? So to me, to hire a phenomenal head of sales ops is critical because in today's world, the tech stack can be overwhelming, right? And it's increased every month, every year with the number of different options you have there, especially now with AI coming out in every category, right? So really how those systems work together is critical. And that's down from, you know, the CRM, at, you have Salesforce, HubSpot, all those players. You can do add-ons with SalesLoft and Outreach and Gong, scheduling software with Calendly. You got gifting stuff with Sendoso and then ingesting all the information. So all those pieces have to be perfected and come together. And that's where I think the head of sales ops and the head of sales and revenue have to really work hand in hand to make sure they have the right system in place.
So in this case, we're talking literally about the system, right? Like the operating system, so to speak, the tools that people are using, the tech stack, right?
That's right. Yeah, and I think with that entire system, you're able to diagnose your entire sales process, you know, from A to Z and really understand where the breaks are in the system. And that's kind of where the true coaching and sales leadership side of the business comes into play.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, that's a really important point for those listening, right? It's not just having a tech stack for the purpose of the sake of having a tech stack. It's so you can effectively diagnose what's really going on and tune and adjust as necessary.
That's right, 100%. And the best sales operations leaders I've worked with, you know, we've had weekly meetings where they were able to come to me and my sales leaders, you know, say have a head of a VP of the East and the West, or maybe directors in each market, you know, in Denver or New York or Boston. and operations can come to you with where the breaks are. And then it's really on the sales leader and the managers to go in and fix those breaks, right? So if you have a really strong tech stack and you're looking at the whole system and you're seeing that, you know, the funnel is broken where you're not setting up meetings. So it's on the manager then at that point, or director, or someone who's leading at sales, or to go figure out what that break is. Like, that's where ops steps out and where sales leaders really step in and, you know, get paid for what they do to figure out how to fix that.
Yeah, good. All right. So a great sales ops partner is one of the key elements in the system. The tech stack and how it enables diagnosis and finding the breaks and the things that need to be solved for. What else? Are there any other kind of key parts of the system, not the technical part, but the people part and the organizational part that you would call out here that are really critical?
Yeah, for sure. You know, not just training when you onboard someone. Of course, that's critical, right? Having a great onboarding and training program, but ongoing training is a huge part of systems that I've seen work the best. Because we're not in a world where you can have one sales process and that's going to work for the next 3 years. It's not like that, right? Things evolve every month, every quarter. You may find different ways to win. So a great leader is able to understand why certain reps are winning more than others and bring that to the broader sales team, right? I even love stuff, you know, if you're getting down to the tactical things, I've even had top sales reps present to the broader sales team. And they could do a better job than me sometimes because they're the ones selling it. Although I like to, I try to stay close to the ground. You know, I'm not always doing deals myself, obviously, right? So having them talk through what's working for them and having a good feedback loop, I find is really important.
So knowing what good looks like out at the field level, knowing that that changes, right? And being ready to sort of understand what's going on and translating that into training and coaching for others is kind of the net of it.
100%. And, you know, leaning on, I think at times people overlook the frontline sales reps. They just want them to focus on their role and get things done. But, you know, they are the ones closest to the customer. So I think taking their feedback into consideration is also very important. You know, other ways of doing that, again, just actual tactics that I think are helpful are having sales councils. You know, if you have a large sales team, 100, 200, 300 people, I've had councils where they'll kind of bring up the ideas and stuff they've seen at play. Then we'll work with product and tech and kind of understand how we want to implement that. But it's all feeding back to the broader feedback loop and the broader systems you're using. And just make sure you're making constant iterations. You know, I think the theme here is nothing's going to work a year from now. It's working today. You know, it's not going to be a straightforward process. Things are going to change. So you have to evolve with the market and competition.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned a sales council. I've seen that idea in other organizations. And one of the things that a sales council is able to do, in addition to everything you just said, is to drive alignment and buy-in on change. A lot of your role from the top is selling people on changes, right, that need to be made, right? Not only strategic changes, but even tactical things. But a sales council can be really instrumental in sort of selling changes to the rest of the organization. Has that been your experience?
100%. Especially if you can lead with statistics or metrics. And this, again, goes back to great leaders I've worked with. You know, I'll give a shout out to Emily Matterin or Alex King, you know, some of the best sales operations leaders that I've worked with. You know, being able to come to the team with proven results. Not like, hey, here's an idea, let's try it. What I like to do, Matt, is, you know, prove it with a couple reps, right? Again, this could vary depending on type of sale. If you're selling SMB or enterprise, it's going to go across the board. But a general idea is, you know, one rep is doing it and you see certain success, being able to display those metrics, I think helps with buy-in, right? Having the rep sometimes present that forward can be a huge win versus, you know, leadership kind of pushing it down. You want to go bottom up sometimes.
Yeah. Totally have the same experience over the years working in the sales performance business. If you can get the reps talking about something that's working, right? Other reps listen versus the guy or the lady running the organization telling them, they're like, maybe you don't understand, right? So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, they gotta be bought into that. And yeah, I think once they see the impact it can have, you know, that'll excite them. You know, it's going to help their job and ultimately increase their, you know, production and their career path, then, you know, it should be no brainer, but you have to show them that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So a couple of things I've gathered so far from what you've said, right? Having a great sales ops partner and leader, an effective sales ops function to enable diagnosis and the things you talked about. Ongoing training, going beyond just the onboarding, getting people smart at the beginning, but having ongoing, being tuned in to the tactics that are working in the field and assembling a sales council that can be sort of a guiding force or really important group of participants in defining what good looks like, right? What else? Anything else in the system? I want to get to other lessons you've learned, but is there anything else you would call out that's sort of critical in terms of the system?
You know, the frontline managers is such a critical part of the system, right? It's really not the CRO coming up with this crazy idea that's going to, you know, solve all problems and 5X revenue. It really is having a playbook, right? I'm sure you have that term a lot on the podcast, but you know, you got to have a playbook and really understand where you need to improve the process, right? So the system overall, like where are the weaknesses in the system? How can you improve on it? And looking at the broader, you know, stack rank of the team, where do people struggle the most, be able to diagnose that. But again, that's where the frontline manager is going to do a better job of that than the CRO or the VP of sales, right? Because they're not going to be able to get down to the individual level as well as you need to fix that process.
Yeah. It's funny. I literally, right before this conversation started, I was just talking with a senior enablement leader who was talking about, we're going to be working on a sales manager's playbook for their organization. And the key focus, it's all about defining the how it at the right level of detail so that people have that sort of ongoing, like you were talking about earlier, they're thinking about their system in a similar way. Playbook, system, whatever you call it, right? But let's have a way of making it really, really clear what's expected of people in terms of how the job is to be done.
That's right. And you know what? One more thing on that, Matt, we've seen a shift. I think in the past, with the way the economy, the market was, people, you know, heads of sales or companies in general, just hiring a bunch of heads to go and chase revenue. And the problem with that is if you don't have a good playbook in place, you're just going to burn cash ultimately. And you know, it's bad for both the company and the reps coming in. It's not fair to them. So I think the shift you're seeing in today's world is people are now hiring when either they feel pain or when they're very confident the playbook is ready to implement and pass off to someone else, right? And that's a big thing in the startup world. Hiring too fast when you're not ready for it, it's going to cause more harm than good. You may increase revenue slightly, but you know, on a per rep basis, you're going to be, you know, hemorrhaging cash there.
Yeah. Well, there's also a chicken and egg thing there too. Like if we didn't do a good enough job of defining how the work is to be done, how can we know we have the right job profile? How can we know we're even hiring the right people, right? So it's sort of this doom loop that you create, right? We just keep throwing bodies at this and it's not working. And it's like, shoot, we got to go back and redefine some things. So seeing it, yeah, unfortunately.
And you know what? I would encourage, you know, first time heads of sales, often they're guided by the board. You know, you're going to have to grow. Once you take capital, you have to grow revenue. It's just how the world works. But be able to kind of push back there and come with a plan as to, hey, maybe we shouldn't go and open a new office. Maybe we shouldn't hire 10 more reps. Let's focus this quarter on getting our metrics right. You know, getting a great cost of sale or a higher LTV, whatever it might be, and then come back and make the hire. So I'd encourage, it's okay to have that healthy conversation.
Yeah.
I think at times people in the sales world just kind of accept what they're told and you see that more on first time heads of sales.
Yeah.
You've done it a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a segue in there because you're not a first time head of sales and you've learned a bunch from the roles you've been in. So I'm curious, what is the most important lesson that you've learned so far about leading a sales organization or a team?
Yep. And this one is clear to me. I touched on it briefly. It's simple. It's frontline managers. And I think most people focus on the CRO, the VP leadership, or the frontline sales reps. And they often, you know, for lack of a better term, neglect sales managers. And that can make or break your entire number. I mean, 57% of people quit because of their direct manager. Yeah, you know, that's an astonishing number. I checked that today. I thought it was 70%. I looked it up, it's 57.
Still
over half. Right?
It's not good.
Forget how great your product is, how big the TAM is, how much money you can make. If you have a bad manager, there's a 50% chance or more you're going to leave that company, which is a mind-blowing stat. So to me, investing in your frontline managers, right, give them the tools they need. I love what you just said about, you know, creating a training and a playbook there. But I often hear people ask, well, I had a referral recently, talked about this for training, but it was frontline rep training. I don't hear often management level frontline manager training.
Well, going back to like the origin story for my businesses, it was the same was true 14 whatever years ago. There's no, you know, easy to find sales training programs, right? Sales execution skills, opportunity management. At the time, far fewer people doing anything about sales manager development. And we knew then, that's the pivotal role. You can spend all the money you want on training and tools, but if that layer isn't committed and effective, it all sort of goes by the wayside.
That's a great point. There's so much to unpack there. I mean, the five things I care about for my frontline managers is, can they recruit and hire? Now, recruiting is its own department, but still hiring is on that manager, right? I want to give them a headcount number to hit. Hiring, you know, training, that's both onboard training and ongoing training. How are they monitoring those reps? That goes back to the massive tech stack. You can do so much monitoring there now in today's world. Motivating is critical. And each rep needs different motivation based on what they care about, some financials, some career, that can span a bunch of different things. And then ultimately, the fifth bucket is firing, right? Knowing when someone's not a good fit. And I'm at the point in my career where, you know, we have to let someone go. It truly is the right move for both the company and that person. And I found time and time again, that sales rep landed a job in another company. It was such a better fit, you know, and if they're not hitting the number and they're struggling, it's not fun for anybody. So it may seem tough to make that move and pull that trigger, but long-term, so many times I've seen it work out for the best for that rep individually.
Yeah. Those are tough conversations, obviously, made a lot harder if we haven't done a good job of setting expectations in the beginning, letting people know how they're doing against those expectations. I think about the least tough or the conversations with people that we had to let go, in my experience, where it was like, okay, it wasn't that awful because we felt like we were setting them up in a new direction. Because we could look at them, I could look at them in the eye and say, okay, I don't think you can be successful in this role, and here's why. So I think the next thing, whether it's here or somewhere else, has got to look like this, right? But it's kind of what you're talking about, right? That's a really key part of the system for managers.
100%. You know, if you're doing it the right way and something called PIPs, so you put someone on an improvement plan, give them the ability, you know, your job as a manager is to also give them the right tools and help them. So if you hire someone, it's your responsibility to give them every possible to get to their number. So, you know, if you're doing it the right way, and you're documenting it and showing them where they need to go, they're not getting there, you're right. That conversation when someone has to be terminated is a lot easier. Usually they accept it. They're like, oh, you know, I understand. We tried this and that. I couldn't get there. The worst is when you blindside someone. You know, to me, that's unacceptable and shouldn't happen if you're managing it the right way. The other side of this is I feel in some companies, you know, people really write people off when they leave. And look, my grandfather had one job his whole career. Right? My dad had two jobs. I'll probably have 10, right? And it's hard for people to understand sometimes how do you change jobs every couple of years. The average head of sales, I think, Matt, you might know this number. I think it's like 17 months is the average tenure for still running a sales team.
Yeah, 16 to 18, depending on whose data you believe.
Yeah, so people are going to move on. And I'm often surprised at how people are treated on the way out. And that's never a good move. You know, anyone that's left any of my companies, you know, either on their own or either, you know, I try to help them where I can, because networking is so important. What goes around comes around. But that's a kind of a side tangent. It's just frustrating to see people, you know, take it personal when someone's to leave or.
Yeah, understood. Yeah, look, it's a small world, right? Especially in tech, like in certain industries, it's
100%.
You know, you want to leave things in the best possible circumstances to the extent you can, right? And it's tough when people don't perform, but I think there's a right way. To your point, all the things you've said about there is a right way to do it, right? And we're trying to set ourselves up for a constructive conversation and setting people up to be successful, maybe elsewhere, but that's kind of the spirit of it, right?
That's right. Yeah. And for the managers, you know, that listening to the podcast, that's people often shy away from that fifth bucket of firing. But if you hit the points that we discussed, you know, you'll find that makes your job a lot easier and you can feel good about how you're handling the situation because you're going to miss on hiring. It's not pot. It's, you know, you interview someone for a couple hours max, there's going to be misses, you know, on both sides.
Yeah. See, I'm sort of like twitching here. I'm thinking about my own, like how many misses. But.
Driving great sales results is hard. Doing it consistently is even harder. There are so many obstacles that can prevent you from becoming the most effective sales leader you can be. Find practical advice you can apply right away by picking up your copy of Matt's book, The Divine Comedy of Sales, at www.divinecomedyofsales.com.
All right. Well, we can acknowledge, look, this is a challenging role. It's not for everybody, but you've been at this for a while and you continue taking these senior most or executive level sales leadership roles. So you must love something about it. What do you love most about the job?
I assume it's an answer you've heard more than once, but to me, it truly is, you know, building careers. seeing someone come in, hopefully out of the University of Delaware, right, in their first job, and ultimately working their way up into my seat. You know, that was my experience. I took a job at Yahoo with no experience. They just, you know, like my presentation that I gave, they gave me a shot, and I, you know, I had to earn it from there. But I love seeing people create lifestyles that they desire through success of sales, following people along in their careers. I'll shout out one name. So Rich Morgan was someone I hired at Signpost. And I joke with him often, his previous job was a camp counselor, you know, running a camp. He was doing, you know, a full spectrum of stuff there, but not even close to anything in the tech, software, sales. And I just thought Rich was great. He presented well. It was, you know, organized, took feedback great. So we gave him a shot. Long story short, a couple of years later, Rich was running our entire Denver office of 100 people on the sales side. You know, now has gone on to do great things. So those are the stories that I love. And, you know, I still talk to Rich every once in a while and we check in. I love to work with him again one day. That's just one example of hundreds where you've seen, you know, you give someone a shot and they prove you, you know, they prove you right. And it's a great, great experience right. To watch that happen.
Yeah, it's a great story. That's, look, there are some organizations and some leaders that are more or less imaginative when they're hiring people, like when they, like some that are like, they're so tight on the profile. They, you know, people can only come from this organization or only gone to this kind of school. And the thing about this profession is you just never really know like the intangibles and what people bring to the job. And sometimes you have to sort of open up your thinking a little bit and can think about the, well, maybe it is the camp counselor, right? Or maybe it is the teacher or whomever, right? So that's great. Very cool story.
I think it's great. And obviously it's going to depend too at level, right? So that's an example. If you're hiring entry level, you can hire someone with no experience as a business development rep. You know, if you're in enterprise sales, obviously you can't take as much risk. You might need someone from a certain industry or from the finance space that has a bunch of career experience there. But you can still get creative within that world. So I think what you're saying is 100% accurate. You don't have to stick to one very stringent profile. You know, you can deviate from that based on what you're looking for.
Yeah. And I think about the five key areas or pillars you called out for frontline managers. It's being able to recruit and hire effectively was the first one. And I think you really have to be tuned in. It's not just the what's in black and white in the job profile, but what do we think is the makeup of somebody who can be successful in this? Like you said, maybe it's an entry level role.
Yeah.
There's a little less risk if it doesn't work out perfectly or if they need a little time to bake some more. But I think having an eye for that's really critical. And the best managers I know kind of have that feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Then just investing the time to making them successful, because they're not going to hit the ground running like someone who's done sales for a year or two or has, again, back to the BDR level. So being able to, if you have a great training program and you're confident in your ability to show them a playbook, then it comes down to their level of effort, how much they want to get out of it. That's where I've seen people thrive. And the other thing is, you know, this is obviously cliche, but celebrating wins is amazing at sales. And that goes across the spectrum to someone setting a meeting, closing their first big deal, all the way up to President's Club and having drinks with someone's significant other and celebrating all their success. It's just such a great feeling as a leader to be able to celebrate those wins, because you go through a lot of ups and downs, you know, a lot of good and bad. And it's nice to be able to celebrate.
Yeah. And to your point a few minutes ago, I had heard similar things from other leaders, right? It's seeing other people win, celebrating those wins, building careers, being a part of people's success, being in the background as they achieve great things. I think that is pretty common. I hear versions of that a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Winning as a team is exciting too. You know, that's more of you might see that more in the startup world, the tech world, but going through all the pain of building a company from scratch, putting all the systems in place, hiring people, and then years down the road, celebrating a liquidity event. An IPO, you know, celebrating an exit. I'll never forget the ones that I've had and been a part of. And those are just incredible experiences.
Yeah. Great memories, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the flip side of this is we can sort of infer from some of the things you said about what are the more challenging aspects of leading. What would you say is like the most challenging part of leading a sales organization based on your experience?
Yeah. You know, and that's shifted since when I graduated a while ago, but the one I've seen pop up a lot is really instant gratification. People coming in where everyone wants the next role right away. They want to within the same year. They don't want to wait, go through the regular career path. So really the question is, how do you manage those expectations in today's world is the big question. So that's what I don't know if you heard that one before, but I've seen that, become more pronounced today than it was a couple of years ago.
Here's what that conversation sounds like often. It's, you know, it's the senior leader, he or she talks about like this generation or this, the new generation. And like, I don't know enough to say it's a generational thing as much as it is what you said, which is people come in. I've seen people that are closer to my age come in with unrealistic expectations into a role. So I don't think it's, for that reason, I'm like, I'm not sure it's a generational thing. You don't have to be young necessarily to have expectations that are out of whack. I don't know. What do you make of it? What do you think is contributing to that?
Yeah, no, that's why I don't use the term millennials, because I don't like to just bucket that into that slot. But I think it's the, where we are today in general, everything's so fast. Everything is instant, right? Just the world we live in. It wasn't like that years ago. So I do think that plays a part of it. And I think the way to handle that is, one, you know, have a clear career path for your sales reps to get to manager and onward. And then I've also had things where, if you want the promotion, great. You have to go way above and beyond. So if you can hit an accelerated number, you know, and show skills outside of just hitting number, you know, are you a team player? Are you showing leadership skills and all that? That will definitely entertain quicker path for people. But one of my favorite sayings are jobs are taken, not given. So I give you a quick example of that for myself, if that's helpful. When I was at Yahoo, I was a sales manager 3 years into my career. So I was 25 years old, managing a sales team of 10 people, which, you know, was a big role for me at the time,
sure,
regardless. And I had to go, by the way, I went from a rep to a manager, which is a really hard switch.
Yeah.
It's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
You know, managing your friends is different. So then the director of sales left to another company, and that role opened up. It was a department of 60 people. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to put my hat in the ring and see what happens. And instead of just kind of hoping for it, I put together a very strategic 30, 60, 180 day, 1 year plan. You know, I really put a ton of work into it, a ton of thought. You know, I thought I had some good stuff to implement. And long story short, to my surprise and many others, I got the job. And I was the youngest director of Yahoo at 25 years old, managing 60 people. But I didn't just, you know, expect it. I went and put the work in, I had a plan. You know, I really thought through what things would look like. I put metrics in there. And I assume the other candidates at the time, you know, potentially just thought they might have had the job because they've been there longer than me.
Right.
So that's like a classic.
Yeah.
Not that I'm so great, but I felt that was a job that I took that no one gave to me.
No, I understand. It's a good example because it's sort of like the, do the job that you want, right? Demonstrate you can do the job before you ever ask to be put in it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a matter of demonstrating the critical thinking, the strategic thinking that's required to be in that next role. Right. So I think that's a good example of that.
I like your point too. Like, you know, it's not just about a sales number. People get caught up all the time. And you know this as well as me. Sometimes the best reps aren't the best managers, so on and so forth. But you have to really think beyond just your own role. Are you truly a team player? You know, do you really care where the company's going? Can you have impact beyond just putting up a number? And, you know, that's where I think separates a lot of people in the next step in their career.
So let's talk about, you know, career, your path. I'm curious, because I presume there's probably been one or more people that have had really big impact on you or have influenced the way you think about your job and your path. So who would you say has had the most influence on you and your work as a leader?
Yeah, I mean, certainly several people at each company have all had impacted me on different ways. To me, the most influential is Mike DeLuca. He was our SVP at Yahoo at the time. And, you know, a lot of the things that he did is what I still do to this day, right? Because that was my first job. So I learned really sales 101 and cut my teeth there. But Mike led from the front. So he demanded results and accountability, but people did want to run through walls for him. You know, that's a great way to lead a team, right? Where you're not just their friend, obviously, you know, you're their leader. You're willing to get on calls and do the job as needed. But people want to win with you, right? They want to be a part of that. You know, there's something you probably heard, the PayPal mafia out from San Francisco, right? A lot of great companies came from that group. In New York City, you know, I coined it myself, right? The Yahoo mafia, and there's countless reps and managers from that New York City office that lead massive sales orgs now, all from, you know, basically the tutelage of Mike DeLuca. So someone like Nolan Farris went to Indeed, couple million in revenue. They're doing billions now in revenue, right? He's the leader of that entire sales team. JP Barnick took Trustpilot to an IPO. So that entire group of people, you know, kind of elevated. I consider Mike to be the leader of that. That's a really cool experience to be a part of.
That's very cool. I'll have to look Mike up. We might have to have him on the show sometime.
Yeah, get him on the podcast. That's right. We still do a dinner in December with a bunch of leaders from Yahoo. So yeah, it's great to see that, right? Because we were reps together in the trenches, and now we all have our own successes and failures that we can talk through.
Yeah, that's very cool. So for those listening, like, can you have this sort of career where you could look back and think, God, we had an environment that spawned all these fantastic careers and leaders who say they learned from me. I don't know if they did, but I think that's a great, who knows if Mike DeLuca, that was something he set out to do, but lo and behold, that's something he can look back on. That's a heck of a legacy.
100%. Just to see all these people in these heads of sales, SVP, VP type roles is incredible. I hope to do that myself. I want someone to say that about me years down the road, with one of the companies I'm at,
All right. Last question. And I ask this sort of big, open, purposely vague question just to catch anything else that I didn't grab from your brain in the last, 20, 30 minutes or so. And it's, what else? What else, Chris? What else do we need to know?
Two things I'll throw at you.
Sure.
One is self-improvement. So first off, congrats to those people listening to this podcast, because your company doesn't require it. You're not getting paid to do it. You're doing it as self-improvement. And really good for you, because that's not something that a lot of people focus on or do. And this is great. This is stuff that I wish I would have done more of when I was leading, sales team or coming up to hear these different conversations. So continue to look at podcasts. Obviously this is a great one. You can look for other sales podcasts. Books are great, and not necessarily just sales leadership books, even stuff, I read the Elon Musk book recently, and it's just crazy to see his story. People see where he is today, but they don't realize, what he had to do to get there. And some of the stuff be relatable when you think about, what wins look like. And, he's obviously a different type of manager overall, but I think continue to work on self-improvement in any ways that you see fit.
Yeah. Look, I think, speaking for myself, I've made a living based on the fact that there are people that want to get better. So thank heaven for that. 20 years at this, right? In one form or another. But, look, I think about the best leaders that I know, they would say something similar. They're always learning, whether it's reading, listening, right, or just networking and talking to people. But they're never, I guess the best leaders that I know don't look at themselves as a finished product.
100%.
Like they're still investing constantly. And that feeds into their enthusiasm for the job. They're like, no, I've got more to do, right? I've got more to learn. I'm not done.
100%. And I think the podcasts are a great platform that we didn't have years ago to have access quicker. If someone can listen to every episode you produce, that's no question going to help them in their career. They might take one nugget away from each episode, and that's more than they had previously. That's going to make a big difference as they're thinking through stuff. The last thing I'd say, Matt, is we kind of touched this briefly, is don't ignore your network until you need that. So what I mean by that is, I consider myself to have a pretty expansive network in both New York, but really the tech industry in general. I'm always open to helping. Someone can reach out to me, I'll always reach back to them and try to help them out. I try to at least once a week, a call or lunch or coffee with something. Not lunch or coffee as much, to be honest. It's more of probably a quick call or check-in. But it's just so valuable to stay in touch with your network, because what happens is things happen. Someone can lose their job. Then all of a sudden you're hitting up people you haven't talked to in years and asking for stuff. And just, really goes both ways. So
yeah.
I do as much as I can to help people in my network with a new job or checking the right person, or I'll never ignore LinkedIn message from someone, which I'll probably get a couple after this episode. And I will respond.
I was going to say, be careful. Be careful what you ask for, Chris. You're going to get a bunch now.
I will respond. But yeah, I mean, LinkedIn profiles are key. In my world, it's so important. Have a great profile and, use it.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I'll say it was the sort of UD connection that helped me to find you and become part of your network. And I'm so thrilled you were able to join the show and share some of the lessons you've learned. And I think the audience is going to be knocked out. They're going to love what we've heard here. And the next thing I'm going to do after I let you go is just offer a kind of a quick summary. I'll talk about a few key points and really challenge the audience to think about, okay, how do we apply what Chris shared with us to our roles? What can you do tomorrow that's just a little different based on some of the things that he shared with us today? So
that's good, Matt.
On behalf of our audience, thank you very much for the time. It was awesome. I loved having you join us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed the conversation.
I want to thank Chris once again for spending the half hour with us to share some of the lessons he's learned and the key parts of his system. So let me play a few things back to you and challenge you to think about how do these fit in your environment? How might they affect how you think about and execute your role as a sales leader. So we talked about a few things. I'll go a little bit out of order just based on the things that struck me most. You know, when he talked about key lessons learned, he said something that resonated with me. Frontline managers are the critical role. You have to invest in them, right? But then he called out there are really five kind of critical areas, aspects of the job that are critical: recruiting and hiring, training, monitoring performance and addressing performance issues, motivating people, finding ways to motivate, and then firing. You know, those five, I think we probably have heard versions of those as key elements of a system from other leaders. But the last one, the firing, is something that we shy away from. I think Chris's point was, you really have to, it's something you have to be able to develop. You have to develop the ability to address when people are simply not going to succeed and you have to let them go. And we talked a little bit about what are some of the best ways to handle that. And, you know, obviously treating people respectfully and making sure that the process of letting someone go isn't more painful than it needs to be. And his point is well taken. The reality is that there are some people in your organization right now and some that you will hire in the future who won't succeed. And really developing the capability, thickening your skin, so to speak, but also having a process that you rely upon to let people go effectively and in a humane, thoughtful sort of a way. When I asked Chris about what are the key elements in his system, the first thing he said was you have to have a really great sales ops partner. Sales operations is critical, and the first thing you really need is a great leader over that function. Why? So that we can diagnose, we can find the breaks in the system, as he put it. Also, another key element in his system is ongoing training, going beyond just onboarding, knowing what good looks like, and translating what we learn about what good looks like into training, doing so on an ongoing basis. So as people do the job, not just in the first 30, 60, 90 days, but their first year or two, right? As they're learning, making sure that we're teaching them the right things. He also recommended, as part of his system, having a sales council, a critical piece if you want to drive alignment and buy-in, not only into, you know, big strategic initiatives, but even tactical things. And there was a connection back to training again, that if we are teaching people what good looks like, that having a sales council that backs that message up, yes, that is exactly how the best do this piece of the job. That's exactly how you will achieve success. That sales council can really play a critically important role in getting others to buy into what great behavior looks like. And then finally, a key part of his system that he called out was that frontline managers need a playbook. There's got to be some way to document how the work is to be done, not only for their reps, but I would add for them. So what's in your playbook, right? What are you doing to clearly explain to sales managers, even leaders of leaders, but also salespeople, what great looks like in the role? Because Chris is telling us that's really a critical element in your system if you want to be successful over time. So as Chris did, I'm going to congratulate you for listening to this episode, right? Investing in your own self-improvement. Nobody forced you to. You spent the 35 plus minutes with us to learn from Chris. I hope that you found today's conversation really valuable and took some nuggets away from it. In our next episode, we're going to hear from another very successful tech industry sales leader. He's got a lot of great lessons to share, some different parts of his system compared to what we heard from Chris today. So I hope you'll join us. You'll love that episode. Until then, this is Matt McDarby, host and author of The Divine Comedy of Sales. Thank you very much for joining. Bye-bye for now.